This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to Been There, Done That with Gordon, Phil, Chris, or Phil, Chris and Gordon, or...
Whichever way you want it.
All of Gordon, part of Phil.
Why only a part of Phil?
Because a lot of my brain is now looking at this big shiny panel with lots of red lights on it.
And what about the red light on the microphone?
That's mesmerising.
Don't tell me you'll always be speechless.
I'll be cross-eyed. I'll probably say something, but... Yeah, we don't know what.
And also we've got Tristan sitting there quietly giggling his head off.
Yes.
So I'll knock his little head off if he giggles too loud.
Okay. Yeah.
So thanks very much to Scotty for the morning show. Thanks indeed to Tim for the news and Lance on the desk, ably replaced now by Julia. So thanks very much indeed for being with us today. It's lovely to have you out there.
Yeah, that's a bit of a dull day, but it's quite pleasant.
Well, we'll brighten it up.
We'll brighten
somehow.
It up a little bit, but it's
not snowing.
It's still winter time, and the days are actually getting longer. It's surprising how longer the days are at the moment.
The first blossoms have started.
Yes, they've started. Yes, a little blossom.
And don't look at me like that.
No,
there's a blossom.
That reminds me of a very famous lady, Blossom Deary.
Oh yes, Scottish lady who went to the
she's
US.
Not, she's American.
I know, but she was of Scottish descent.
Oh, she probably...
You know a bit, I know a bit. Yeah. But she had a voice that would fill a doll's house.
That's about right, yes.
Yes, it was a very small
brilliant pianist and everything.
Yes, yeah, anyhow, jazz pianist.
She was a blossom that I like.
And she wasn't even on our list of things to talk about today.
No.
Which shows how tight we are here.
Oh, yes.
on theme.
Chris, you were saying about a suburban fox that you've got.
Well, in fact, I did, yes. Last Tuesday, I think it might have been, I was at my kitchen window just looking out over the jungle, which is my backyard, and I noticed a creature in the far, far corner looking back at me. And I thought, oh, that doesn't look like a cat that normally lives in the backyard. I wonder, and I looked a bit harder, and it was a suburban fox.
And there are a lot of foxes around in the suburbs. It's quite amazing how many there are.
Well, obviously he'd found a little bit of a nest somewhere and decided that my backyard was quite quiet enough for him.
Yeah.
But so I took a photo with my mobile phone camera and sent it to a couple of people, and they said, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then, I went outside to actually see it, and it scampered away.
Scampered away.
Over the fence.
I was driving up Nepean Highway when I was going to work, when I was working at the college, and I used to have to start work at 6 o'clock in the morning, driving up the road, and a fox ran across the road in front of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
He didn't know to look both ways, did he?
He didn't know to look both ways, but he got across safely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which reminds me of getting across the road. Did you see that thing on the news about the little duck going across that freeway in America, about a 5-lane freeway?
Oh,
and survived.
And it survived it, and its little duckling survived. It was just amazing how the cars went around it.
Wow. Well, you find that on Lakeside Drive going around Albert Park Lake.
Some times of the year.
And yes.
And around Blackburn Lake as well.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We often stop.
Yep.
Well, actually, we always stop.
Oh.
I'll change that statement.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to have your
name. Did your fox have a bunny in its mouth?
Well, no, but I don't have very many pigeons in the yard anymore.
No, I'm thinking of bugs.
I know, but I know, and someone said their big cat has gone missing.
Ooh.
So I looks
ran
like
ran off with the pigeons.
but we're talking about Bugs Bunny. It's his birthday today.
Well, that's right. On the 27th of July 1940, the cartoon character Bugs Bunny made his first appearance in the animated cartoon A Wild Hare.
And can you imagine being Bugs Bunny's doctor?
Why?
Well, he goes to the surgery and the doctor's supposed to be asking what's wrong. And the first thing Bugs Bunny says is, what's up, Doc? That would drive you nuts.
No, in fact, that actually came a little bit later in his existence, and that's when he got his actual voice through Mel Blanc.
Yeah, Mel Blanc did a lot of voices on cartoons. He did
all the Warner Brothers.
Yeah, everything that Warner Brothers ever did, I think he just did every one of them.
The insurance must have been enormous on his life.
Because
he did them all, literally.
Yeah, that's right. If anything had happened to him, they wouldn't have had any voices for their cartoons.
They would have gone back to the silent era.
Well, we know from recent events that the voice of Mr. Burns...
I don't know if you saw the update last week.
What?
He's back.
The voice is back.
All the original cast are reunited.
Oh, so he demanded and received a new wage.
$800,000
a
week.
Oh, what?
A week.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What was his name?
What's his Simpsons, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
We had a holdout.
I might have guessed.
No, the person who did the voice of Mr. Burns actually did a few other voices as well.
Oh, they all did heaps.
And, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, speaking of that, you get what you give.
Here on Joy, 94.9.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil, Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us today.
There's a very, 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 very famous person in Australian history is having a birthday. Would have had a birthday tomorrow.
Because that's what we like to talk about on the show is icons in various communities. Quite often we use icons from the gay community, but... today we're going to be talking about an icon from the Aboriginal community, one of the first peoples.
Yes, one of our first people. Yep.
And we're talking about Albert Namatjira.
Yep.
And possibly he was born in 1902 on July the 28th, which is tomorrow, the anniversary. But he was he became a famous painter. He had a distinctive painting style, and he was based in the middle of Australia around Alice Springs, and his paintings were always so distinctive because he used a very vibrant red for the soil of the country. The skies were blastingly blue, and the tree trunks were wonderfully white.
You know that famous painting?
Oh, it was alliteration there, wasn't there?
You know that famous tree that he painted?
Yeah.
He painted it a couple of times. They killed that.
Who did?
Someone went out and killed it. It's no longer there.
Bloody Nora.
Yeah. He was actually educated at the Hermannsburg Mission, and he took up watercolouring, which was something that he could do. And he was actually...
Was this because he was just sitting around?
Well, I don't know.
They
probably did their own style of painting, but he picked up watercolours very, very quickly, and that's where he found his fame. But he was not appreciated in his own tribe because they said he would paint it out of the tradition.
Oh, right. So he was painting in the European style rather than the Aboriginal style. Right. And you as a painter yourself, Gordon, you would know about the techniques of... colour mixing and things like
techniques
this.
Techniques of watercolour, yeah.
But as I said before, his colours were so strong.
Oh, well, if you get out into that part, the colours are bloody strong. Yes, you cannot do anything else about it. And you do have to mix your colours to get it. You would mix reds with yellows to get the orange and the dark colours. And it's a lot of mixing to get the right colours for it, yeah.
And so he had a very good eye, though, for the countryside.
Oh, yeah.
But the hills were always purplish.
Well, they are. Yeah. In the distance, the hills become purple. You get the red close up, and they become bluey, purpley as you go off in the distance. Yeah, and that's where he was so clever because he could see that, and that was what it is.
He was born in 1902, and he actually didn't get Australian citizenship. Hello, he was born here until 1957.
But he was the first Aboriginal to be made an Australian citizen.
What the?
He was the first.
Live under a rock.
Yeah, no, the Aboriginals never had citizenship until that referendum we had, you see. So he was actually the first Aboriginal to be given Australian citizenship in 1957. And yet we had Aboriginal people go off to war and fight.
Oh, yes.
But then getting away from him was another lady who was absolutely stunning. Another stunning part Aboriginal lady who took the world by storm. Her birthday's on the 31st of July.
Also a wonderful icon and a representative
of and she's still around and she's still lovely. Mm. Yes,
we're talking about Yvonne Goolagong.
Goolagong, yes, Yvonne Goolagong
Cawley. What was her claimed fame. She was a professional tennis player.
Won Wimbledon twice. Quite a few. She won the French Open once and Australian Open four times. Yeah, so she was pretty good tennis player.
And she never pulled a tanty.
No.
And she never criticised Tennis Australia.
No.
Yet she won despite that.
Yes, that's right. And she's still engaged with the Federation Cup, which is the women's tennis tournament between nations or something. Or else, like the Davis Cup for women sort of thing, I think.
Girls with yellow fuzzy balls.
Yeah.
Tennis players.
you had me worried there for a moment.
And then another thing coming from the country, we're talking about country Australia now, is the opal.
Well, that was... I'm not sure that it's actually exclusively Australian.
No, it isn't, but most of the great opals are found in Australia.
97%.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Mm. And it was made on this day in 1993, the Australian National Emblem.
Australian National Emblem stone, really. Mm. Yes. Australia's national stone was the opal. It's also my birthstone. So,
oh.
Yes, so there we go.
Phil, he has to get in on the act, doesn't he?
Yes.
Speaking of such, there's a character on The Simpsons. Based on Oprah Winfrey,
her
name is Opal.
Opal.
Oh, really?
Because they couldn't use Oprah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, they couldn't, of course, yeah.
But some people say it's an unlucky stone.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be, yes, but it's just got such magnificent colours. You can get every colour of the rainbow, which should be probably our stone, because you can get every colour of the rainbow in an opal.
It should come with a warning, though.
What?
Do not swallow stone.
Oh, right.
Everything today has a warning.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yes, yes. So,
yeah.
And even contents may be hot. Do not swallow opals.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Cooper Pedy, Lightning Ridge.
Yeah.
So where's Lightning Ridge?
North of South Australia. And Cooper Pedy's in New South Wales.
Right.
I think that's right. I'm pretty sure.
Big stretch of country.
Yeah.
And the Australian Aborigines tell a legend that
Lightning Ridge is in northwest of New South Wales. The other way around it is. Yeah, and Cooper Pedy's in the north.
And with a lot of these natural events, there are legends. And, of course, there's Aboriginal legends. And they reckon that the opal was created when a rainbow fell to earth.
What am I telling you? We should have it for our stone. That should be the gay stone, because we have the rainbow. So
but
we
if we could find that spot, we'd get the pot of gold.
Oh, no, yeah, that's for Irishmen. We're not Irish.
I'll take Irish gold. I'm not proud.
All right, okay.
But I think we should have some music.
All right, then. What have you got lined up for us, please,
Well,
Phil?
It's called The Rush.
The Rush.
And that's Bjorn Bodden Radio Edit.
Okay. Well,
I don't know what that means.
It means it's made specially for the radio.
But it means if I hit this little blue button, things will happen as they should.
That's right. Go hit the blue button.
Here we go.
I want to know just what you're feeling. I can tell there's something more behind your eyes. Another bump.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Indeed, and you're with Phil, Chris and Gordon.
Yep.
Been there, done that. About halfway through the program.
Doesn't time fly when you're having fun?
Well, we are having a little bit of fun here, but we also sort of curse sometimes the way our politicians seem to muddle around and not recognise the fact that they need to authorise certain big projects to be done.
It's called infrastructure, which they don't like. Latest governments don't like infrastructure for some reason.
No.
I don't know why. It's something that they just don't
I heard somewhere they're building a new heliport.
Oh, are they? Oh,
yes.
Oh, up in northern suburbs in New South Wales.
Well, probably in Geelong.
Yeah, in Geelong, or maybe on the way to Geelong, in case you want to stop and get a coffee.
Yeah, but see, we haven't built any, we haven't had any big infrastructures for years. And the last great one that was built, of course, is the one we're going to be talking about, because the only other infrastructure we've had was when John Howard built the railway line from Alice Springs to Darwin.
Yeah.
That was the last thing. We haven't had anything else since.
He had help. I just need to point out.
Hey?
He had help.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what?
He didn't build it himself.
He didn't build it
himself. Oh, no. I was going to say, it's just his birthday today, isn't it, Tristan? Yes.
Who? John Howard's birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then good on you, Tristan. You go. Thank you.
Tristan can sing happy birthday.
No,
he's shaking
can't.
His head.
Yeah, but anyhow.
But the Ord River Scheme in WA?
That was done by, I think that was done by this WA government.
No,
I don't think it was, think it was Commonwealth, was it? I don't think so.
At any rate, anyhow, in 1949, the world was still trying to recover from the obliteration and disruption of the World War II, 39 to 45.
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of displaced people in Europe that couldn't go back, didn't want to go back, had no country to go back to, had no family to go back to.
The houses had been blown to smithereens.
Well, exactly, exactly. Mm. Totally displaced. And, there was lots of people looking for a new country to migrate to. And strangely enough, Australia put up its hand and said, give us your peoples.
We didn't turn back boats then.
We certainly did not.
We accepted the big liners coming in full of people to come into Australia.
We paid some of them to do it.
And what we brought them out here for was to build the Snowy Mountain Scheme, which was the big thing that they had.
Exactly, which was wonderful because a lot of those guys had skills already in dealing with mountains, of rocks, of drilling holes, of building.
Again, just in the interest of correctness, the mountains were actually built.
Oh, that's right.
When they arrived.
We didn't,
we
didn't
weren't building the Snowy Mountain as a scheme.
We were building the dam to block
it. No need for that language.
No.
We were trying to capture water.
Right,
no,
that's right.
Let's face it as well.
Electricity. They were building it basically for electricity. It was nothing to do with water.
Well,
hydroelectricity was what they were after. They wanted a hydroelectricity plant.
Yes. However, those mountains were named by an explorer, the Polish explorer, Strzelecki, and he named the highest peak after one of his favourite heroes.
Kosciuszko.
Which actually was just a sneeze.
That's right.
Exactly. So it was interesting. I was listening to something on radio from the US or somewhere, and they were talking about Kosciuszko, and they used that Polish pronunciation, not Kosciuszko.
Yeah, but see, there's a huge Polish population in America.
The Americans are good at that.
Very good.
Yeah, they've got a source.
The best thing about the Snowy Mountain Scheme was that it was started in 1949. It took 25 years to build and complete, and it cost $1 billion, well under budget, and over 100,000 men and women from 30 countries worked on the scheme, and Australians made up most of the workforce. The immigrants contributed significantly to the post-war boom, which is wonderful, and 121 people actually died when they were building it. Well, you always get sort of deaths in those big constructions because there's rock falls and there's bits and pieces that happen, and nobody wishes it to happen, but they actually do, you know. But it was started by the Labor Party when they were in government, and Mr. Menzies finished it. Because he had to. It had to be kept going. Yeah, and they had
so you mean it wasn't always just a one-year event or a three-year event?
Oh, God, no. It took 25 years to build.
I think that's the problem with our current...
See, there's eight elections in 25 years if you keep them to every 3 years.
And we were promised cheap electricity. Oh. We had electric medallion homes being built that were all electric.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Expo Electric 69 was built on the promise of the Snowy Mountains... Not free power, but cheap power.
Cheap power, yeah.
And all these things were promised. We had TV screens that took up a whole wall.
But the funny part about the thing, the power was supposed to be only for New South Wales. There was nothing to come to Victoria. It was because we had our own coal-fired power stations down here.
And we can use them forever.
But it was only ever built for New South Wales power. But now it goes all around Australia, all around the...
Because there's a national grid.
There's a national grid.
Isn't it interesting that we actually have realised... 50 years later or more, that there was lots of damage done by the Snowy Scheme environmentally.
The Snowy Mountains River itself was stopped.
Yeah.
It became just a trickle. And the people in Victoria who relied on the water from the Snowy Mountains, that's why the chap won the election as an independent, because he was going to campaign to get the water back in the Snowy. And they now do release so many millions of litres of water into the Snowy River scheme. So that the river is now sort of running.
I think our political processes are probably a little bit better these days with trying to analyse and determine the outcomes of some of these events
or environmental impact statements and things.
Exactly. What a beautiful big mouthful of words there.
Yes, but all they would have done in the 40s when they were setting this up was thinking, well, probably going to drown some rabbits.
That also caused a quite significant catastrophe too, the building of the Snowy Mountains. In July the 30th in 1997.
Oh, well, of course, there was villages around that had to be built for the workers in all these sort of out-of-the-way places. Now actually function quite well as snow resorts.
That's right.
But before then, there was just nothing. But then in Threadbow was one of these places that had been built. And on the July the 30th, 1997, the Alpine Way, the sort of the road that meandered its way through.
Going into the Snowy Mountains,
section of that collapsed, killing 18 people and taking out lots of houses at the same time. But one of the fellows, one who was presumed dead at this stage initially, was found, and they actually had to dig him out.
The sole survivor.
It was the sole survivor, yeah, Stuart Driver. Yeah, he was trapped between two lumps of concrete and completely unhurt, but couldn't move, couldn't get out. And they finally were able to get him out, which was, I think it was worldwide news, actually, when they did get him out.
Well, I was in Sydney at the time for a work thing, and once they discovered he was alive, that was all. It was on TV.
Yeah.
Just 24/7.
Yeah.
So you'll probably see some of that on TV if you're reading TV news towards the end of the month, but he was sort of trapped under there for about 3 days.
Yeah. But he was also with his wife. She had passed away. She was basically next to him, but she had passed away, and he was still alive. Yeah,
it
was
amazing.
Somebody would even get out of it, because it was just like a concrete wall had collapsed on him, but didn't sort of hit him, which was very fortunate for him.
And that's sort of a modern feat of tunnelling, but an old feat of tunnelling was in London in 1870. Tower Subway, the first tube railway in the world, was opened under the Thames River in London. So they can do with it. We got to do it.
1870, though.
It didn't last very long, though, and then they finally decided that they would build a whole complete tube section, and they became the first underground railway in the world.
And the rats are still thanking them.
Probably, yeah.
I think we need some rat music.
Oh, have we got any rat music?
I haven't got any rat music. I've got beating like a drum.
Oh, well.
And look, it's a proper edit as opposed to all those other ones.
You might have been the Pied Piper with your drum taking the rats out of the drain.
I thought he had a flute.
Oh, well, we could give him a drum this
morning.
This
is the more modern Pied Piper.
We'll give him a drum this morning.
We'll talk less and sing more.
You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
And the sun's coming out. Look at
Hello, yes.
Nice day.
Smiling
on us now. But
now, do you watch much TV, Gordon?
A fair bit. I usually record everything and sit down and watch it later.
But that's all right.
Yeah, but I do.
Did you get hooked up in the cooking shows?
I don't like cooking shows.
Why not?
Because I can't. I never eat that sort of food, and I don't want to know how to cook it.
Oh, you're such a plain fellow.
But the food is so pretty.
It is. It's a shame to destroy.
I can't watch those reality cooking shows. They drive me up the wall. Occasionally, I will cop one of the women on SBS. I think Kylie Kwong.
Yes.
I've seen her cook on the SBS program.
Well, do you know about Kylie? She's an icon from our community.
I know she's from our community.
Yes. She's in the Sunday newspaper. An article was written about her. And it was, you know, What I Know About Women, written by someone interviewing Kylie Kwong, aged 45, chef, in a relationship.
Well, that's good for her.
Exactly. I mean, it's so mainstream now. It's great. And the way it's been written, it's so matter-of-fact and everything. Kylie's father had died and her partner came into her life. It's written here. And I remember Mum sending the new partner, Nell, a Christmas card that year, thanking her for looking after me such a sad time. And she says, Nell is such a joy in my life. And sort of that's exactly
how relationships should
work. Yeah. One is supporting the other, complimenting and things like this. I don't think it really needs to be formalized it doesn't have to sit in a set of guidelines.
No.
It can be what you make it with a relationship, but a life partnership is great.
It's lovely when you know somebody's found somebody that they're really happy with. They have a little boy too, don't they?
Well, they did. He was born stillborn.
Oh, right.
So that's when Kylie really crashed to ground. Well, of course, her partner did as well. They both crashed.
That's one of the worst things that could happen to a woman when they have a stillborn child. Mm.
And apparently earlier this year, Kylie proposed to Nell, and she said yes, and they're going to have a Buddhist commitment ceremony.
Well, good on them. But if this government we've got their act together, we might even have equal marriage.
Well, yeah.
You know,
but of course, the state part is one thing, and then how you formalise your arrangement is another. Mm. And I think, knowing a few Buddhists around, they actually seem to have a way of living that's a little bit different to my way, mm-hmm. but they're far more at peace with themselves or the rest of society, and I don't know what it is.
No, well, they're not big on material possessions, are they?
See, Buddhism is not a religion, it's a philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a totally different thing. It's not a religion per se like Islam or Christianity or Judaism or one of those. It is a philosophy rather than a religion, and it stands people in a lot of good stead. Yeah. It's amazing that if we could get our government to do something about equal marriage, it'd be everything would be all fine, you know.
Well, there's just so many examples around that, you know, people are and they're having what I'm going to call roughly hookups of a very permanent nature.
That's right. Yeah.
And they're doing it, but they're not getting the benefit of the laws that are purely restricted to people that are married in a particular legal sense.
I'd like to say that we should do what they do in France.
What's that?
In France, you get married by the government.
Yeah.
You have to get married in a registry office to make it legal, and then you can go and have a church wedding. But you don't get married in a church. That's the
difference. So there's no popping into the registry to sign the paperwork in the...
No, you don't. You can't sign the paperwork.
That's all done beforehand.
You've got it. Everything is done in the registry office, and then you can go off and have yourself a church wedding.
And the downside is?
Well...
You wake up French.
Oh,
thank you.
Chasing truffles.
Yeah, but I think that's a wonderful situation. Then you don't have to have the worry about religions not marrying you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It
would obviate all that need to go to a church to get married, because you'd be married by the government. And then you can have your church wedding. And if the church don't want to marry you, it doesn't matter. You don't have to have it. But you are legally bound. Yeah.
I was in the city on Saturday evening, and there were stacks and stacks of touristy-type people all getting around the city. It was brilliant. I believe that a lot of them had come into Australia as part of the MCG football match on Friday night.
Yes.
Which was, in fact, soccer.
Soccer wasn't football.
And 99.5
Well, it was pure football.
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah, we're getting into technicalities again. They can call it football because they actually aren't allowed to touch it with their hands.
That's right, yes.
So that's football.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our game would be called foot, hand, head, back, bum, anything ball.
Yeah. But the Real Madrid was playing Manchester.
Manchester United. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Manu. And everybody was having their little bit of a sing-along. But
it's not Manu, it's Man City.
Man City, thank you very much.
A very much more lowly little team.
Oh, right. Man City was.
Yes, would have had 200,000 people if Manu were there.
Right.
Good. Thank you. But it was great to see hear these new voices around the streets talking. And there's lots of Chinese tourists as well going around snapping left, right and centre. The place is actually becoming quite cosmopolitan.
It makes for a lovely sort of atmosphere sometimes.
It
when
does.
That happens, yeah.
Talking about another form of sport with balls and feet, we're talking about
National Rugby League.
Rugby star Ian Roberts was born on the 31st of July 1965. Now, who's he? He's a big lump of a lad.
Gorgeous looking guy.
Oh, he's got a rugged face, though. Knocked around a bit, I think, by the sport. And I hope that he hasn't had too much damage to his brain sitting in his cranium.
No, I don't think so.
I
don't think he would have been hit in. He was such a big guy. I don't think they would have flung him to the ground too often.
But he came out as being gay.
That's right. When he stopped playing, he came out. Yeah.
And I just wonder what his mates in the team would have thought if he'd come out gay whilst he was still playing.
I've got the answer to that, but I'm not going to say it on air. Go on. Just continue talking.
Now we all want to know.
Turn your mics off and stop it. We'll just,
moving right along.
Are we? Okay, then. No, but but he was a great icon from the point of view that you can play a thugby or rugby and still be gay.
Yeah, well, there's supposed to be 1 in 10, aren't we? You know? That's supposed to be the average is 1 in 10. So we're in every sport. There's got to be some in Australian rules football.
Everywhere.
There's probably somebody on the Tour de France riding a bike. You know, we're everywhere. We're bigger than Rotary.
But we don't have a secret handshake yet.
We're everywhere. And I'm pleased to see what Barack Obama has been giving the Kenyans a bit of a blast about the way they're treating their gay community.
But he's got a lot of Secret Service people protecting him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'd need it because
wouldn't go there and say you really should ease up on the gays.
No, but you could do if you're president of the USA. You wouldn't have any problem with saying it to anybody, you know. But whether they would take any notice of it or not, because...
I don't think so.
I don't think so, because they've already had some American Christians going in there, fundamentalist Christians going in there and telling them to change their laws about homosexuality, and that's where it's all coming from.
A lot of the education that has come through for the what I'll call in closet people has been in the form of books of prose, of stories, of self stories. William S. Burroughs was a US writer, and he told of his life in a lot of the books he wrote.
That's right.
But he was also hooked on drugs and didn't come out terribly well from that particular experience. James Baldwin, who's got a birthday on August the 2nd, he was an American novelist, essayist, playwright, poet and social critic.
And a black American to boot.
Oh, indeed. Mm. And he, of course, in his works, he explored the unspoken at that stage in intricacies of racial, sexual and class distinctions.
His big book was Giovanni's Room, which was a beautiful book.
That was one of my coming out books.
I read that probably when I was about 18, I think. Yeah,
good way. Mm. And he lived all facets of his life, but through the pages, through his writings. A very good example of how you can be discriminated on 1, 2, 3 counts.
He was behind the eight ball for a while because he was a black American and they weren't recognised very well.
No.
And he was also gay, you know, and he was also an author, you know, but so you've had those...
Lucky he wasn't a whale.
Yeah.
He had nothing going
but
for him.
But he actually turned his back on his country and went and lived in France.
That's right.
Because that was a far more accepting society.
So he woke up in the morning French.
See, it can happen.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful.
Yeah. He was a close friend of the singer, pianist and civil rights activist Nina Simone.
Yep.
And a few of the other groups. And they were all working on the civil rights there of the black communities and presumably at the same time, the gay communities.
Speaking of time.
It's nearly time for us to go. Oh, my golly gosh.
I have no idea where the last hour has gone.
You've been sitting there pushing the buttons. That's where
I know,
it's gone.
And maybe I'm controlling time.
Well, I should slow down a bit, shouldn't I?
We'll have to call him a Time Lord.
Better than the last thing I heard.
Thanks very much for being with us today. Lovely to have had your company and your little messages that have come in via the front desk. Thank you. And we hope that you'll join us again next week.
And we'll have another whole lot of
stuff.
Nonsense.
Whatever this
giggles.
Was.
It takes a bit of a while to put it together. But
it takes a lot of work from you to get it all printed up and for us to sort of read it.
We can undo it in an instant.
Yeah.
Okay, by pressing a few buttons. Thanks
very
much.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.